You are listening to Studio 41.
Welcome to another episode of Quiz Time India. I'm your host and quiz master, Aditya, and in today's episode, joining me on the podcast for a round of quizzing is Aditya Mubai.
Hi, my name is Aditya Mubai. I am from Delhi.
I was reading up about the national anthem and I realized that
what they would call a curate's egg.
Pearl Harbor was also somewhere around the same time, but...
And it ended when the English team had to catch their boat to go back home.
In North India, we use wheat flour. In South India, we use rice flour. The show is about to begin. Hello and welcome. Did you know French colonizers are the reason why we have 52 cards in a deck? Did you know one plastic bottle, if recycled, can save enough energy to light a 60-watt bulb for 6 hours? And if you didn't know such rasgulla and gulab jamun of facts, you have come to the right place. Quiz Time India, a podcast where you will find facts and fun in equal measure. Let us begin this week's episode. First up is the matter of the audience question. Last week we had Tilak Shah on the podcast and this was his question.
So my question to the audience is, what was that one major change Google made in their services on the search engine? The I am lucky button is still available on the Google homepage. There are multiple things that they have done over the years. One major feature, I can promise each and every one of you that you know of this feature.
And the correct answer was given by Shrikant Verma. Shrikant, thank you so much for sending in your answer. And you, if you would also like to send in the answer to the audience question, all you have to do is listen to the audience question at the end of each episode and then send us the answer via social media. We are Quiz Time India on Facebook and on Instagram. That is all you have to do. And now is the time for me to introduce this week's guest. His name is Aditya Mubai. He is a knowledge entrepreneur and a quiz master who has conducted more than 3,500 quizzes. Yes, he has represented India at the World Masters Quiz. He was the youngest finalist of the iconic Bonvita radio quiz and he has spearheaded research teams for cult TV shows such as Kaun Banega Crorepati and Mastermind India. Mr. Mubai's enterprise, QuizCraft Global Knowledge Solutions, is among India's leaders in creating content for live quizzes, TV, social media, books, radio and even apps. Before I jump into the episode, let me tell you, it was an absolute pleasure to quiz with Aditya because the level of questions that he brought was just phenomenal. Once again, I welcome you to Quiz Time India. Hello Aditya, thank you so much for joining me on Quiz Time India. How have you been?
Hi Aditya, I'm good. It's been a sort of a mixed bag, what they would call a curate's egg in past days. The last almost a full year now, because we've been more or less grounded, but things look like they're sorting themselves out a little.
Yes, absolutely. So to start out, I'll just tell the rules, especially for those who are joining us for the first time, the listeners who are joining us for the first time. The rules, well, basically it's quite simple. Two of us each have a set of questions ready with us. What we'll do is we'll take turns asking each other these questions. If and when we stumble or need some help, we can ask each other for hints. It is as simple as that. And together and along with us, hopefully our audience also, gets to learn some new interesting trivia, some new interesting facts. Does that make sense, Aditya?
Of course, that's the whole purpose of all these quizzes and exercises as far as we're concerned. It's a learning tool. It's a way of exchanging information. It's a way of finding out more about the world in which we live. And it's a fascinating world out there or inside there, whichever way you want to see it. So the more you learn, the more you interact, the more you exchange, the better your life becomes.
I couldn't have put it better. So the tradition on the show is that since I'm the host, I'll make you feel comfortable. I'll start out with the first question for you. And since, as I said, this is the first question, it's a relatively easier question. And the difficulty will be turned up a notch as we go forth.
Okay.
So, your first question, Aditya, has to do with national anthems.
Okay.
Now, national anthems have a lot of peculiar stories about them. I was just reading the other day that how Czechoslovakia, when it was a nation, the national anthem was basically a Czech song and a Slovakian song. And when they split, the Czech took the Czech song and made it their national anthem, and the Slovaks took the Slovak song and made it their national anthem. And I was just reading up about more national anthems, and I realized that the UK national anthem is also quite peculiar. Peculiar in the sense that the national anthem, the lyrics of the national anthem, can change depending upon a particular situation. I need you to tell me, what is this particular situation depending upon which the UK national anthem can change?
Okay, so first up, A, you said it's an easy question, so I'm not going to go down any rabbit hole looking for esoteric origins or meanings into it. So let's keep it as simple and as straightforward. Let me first go with this. If I'm wrong, then maybe you can give me a hint, okay? So first up, right now the national anthem of the UK is God Save the Queen. Some 70 years ago, it was God Save the King. So I'm assuming that it depends.
Absolutely.
The wording of the national anthem will change depending on whether the ruling monarch is a king or a queen. So is that it?
That is absolutely it. That is exactly what it was. I actually went down this rabbit hole because one day it just struck me that the queen was always not the one true ruling monarch. So what did they do with the national anthem? And that's when I realized that at least in my lifetime, I've never heard God Save the King. So I always imagined it to be God Save the Queen.
Yeah.
And then I realized like, oh, it used to be God Save the King.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think most people even listening to the podcast would have heard God Save the King being played.
Although God Save the Queen / King is the sort of de facto national anthem. But if you happen to see any sporting events with England participating, say the last year's World Cup final, they don't have God Save the Queen playing there. Whenever England is participating in an event, they play a song called Jerusalem. This song is based on apparently on a William Blake poem, and that is used as an anthem during the sporting events. Do you know about this?
I did know about it. I didn't know the William Blake connection, but I knew that England cannot use, when they are playing, they cannot use God Save the King or Queen, because that is for the United Kingdom of England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. So they all have a share in it.
Yeah.
And you can't have the same national anthem being played for different teams. So they had to go for a different song. But yeah, it's interesting that it's a Blake poem originally.
And also something I realized while doing my research, that it is God Save the Queen / King is the de facto national anthem of a whole lot of additional countries, pretty much all of which were part of the Commonwealth. So Bermuda, Australia, New Zealand, Bahamas, and even Canada for that matter, they all have God Save the Queen as their secondary national anthem.
The other territories, overseas, dominions, protectorates, etc., all use that. So your British Virgin Islands, Bermuda, they all use God Save the Monarch. Okay.
So that was the first question.
Yes. I'm going down to Second World War. It has always been a fascinating thing for me. And incidentally, I took part in a show called Mastermind long time ago, last century in fact. And my subject there was fighter planes of the Second World War. So I'm going to inflict some Second World War stuff on you and the listeners. So let's go with a reasonably easy one.
Please.
Yushan is the Chinese name for a mountain peak in Taiwan, also called Chinese Taipei. It's the tallest mountain peak in Taiwan, and it's part of what is known as the Philippines Plate. So over the last century or so, it has actually grown substantially taller. Now, when during the Second World War and immediately before that, Taiwan, or Formosa as it was called, was part of the Japanese Empire. And the Japanese, of course, didn't like calling the mountain Yushan. They called it Nitaka. So Mount Hidaka, apart from being the tallest peak in the Japanese Empire, had a political connection, let's say a geopolitical connection, in 1941. What was this specific connect?
Connect to something, or is there anything else that is there with it? I didn't get the last bit of the question.
Saying that it was the tallest mountain peak in the entire Japanese Empire. Because of that, it was given some political relevance in 1941. What was this political relevance?
Okay.
Yushan, the mountain peak in Taiwan, attained in 1941.
Hmm. So it attained some political relevance in 1941.
Historic relevance.
So I'm just thinking, some sort of iconography. That how we have Mount Fuji as a icon of sort. Am I in the right ballpark? Is that the right direction?
No, it's more to do with a specific incident.
Hmm.
And if you've seen this 1980s, mid-80s film, I don't know if you have, but there's a film called The Final Countdown. Nothing to do with the song.
Yeah.
It's a film on a time warp or time travel. Or centered around that. I saw it when I was in school, so it just took me back there.
Mm. And you mentioned it has something to do with the planes.
No, I didn't mention planes. But if you want to pick that up and go with it, that's fine.
Will that lead me to anywhere close to the answer?
It could. You could pick up that baton and start running and see where you go.
So let's just take the facts here. Chinese Taiwan, Yushan was the mountain peak.
Hmm.
1941, the Japanese were in control of that area, and they didn't like to call it by the Chinese name, and they call it Nitaka.
Nitaka, N-I-I-T-A-K-A.
And that peak is of some geopolitical importance. Now, we need to know, we figure out what is that importance and some event related to that peak.
Yes, so if you, I mean... There is Formosa had an important role to play in during the Second World War in other ways, many ways actually.
Mm-hmm.
So while this is not a direct thing on Formosa, it is because of its connection, it became important.
Let me think. I would need a hint if you could possibly give me one.
Okay, so I'll give you a... something that the most people connect Formosa with the Subhash Chandra Bose's crash.
Yeah.
But this is nothing to do with it. So it has, I gave you the year 1941. So that is of great significance. Mm. So if you can reach back into the past and figure out 1941 mein kya hua tha, the major event of 1941, connected with Japan, of course, because we're looking at the Japanese Empire.
What could have happened? Now, when was Pearl Harbor? Pearl Harbor was also somewhere around the same time, but I don't think that would be... Yeah, another clue would do. Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, so connecting to the film that I saw, The Final Countdown, it's basically about the USS Nimitz. Yeah. USS Nimitz, which was at that time one of the big aircraft carriers. In the 70s, it was 80s, it was one of the biggest aircraft carriers that the US Navy had. And it travels back in time to 1941. And the whole concept of the film is what could happen if you can change past events. Or you're in a position to change past events. So you should go with your gut feel, essentially. For me, that's a big learning over years of quizzing and... advice that I give to any young quizzer, your gut feel is almost always correct. So, like you said, you had thought up of something and you were going around there, but then you denied.
Planes is what I was thinking of.
Yeah, you mentioned something else also.
Pearl Harbor is something that I mentioned.
Yes, you mentioned it, but you didn't follow up with it. You abandoned that thread somewhere.
So, Pearl Harbor... was an American base, right?
Pearl Harbor was the naval base in Hawaii.
I think it was around the same time when it was attacked.
7th of December, 1941. Well, you're just about there. So,
yeah.
Climb Mount Nitaka was the code word for the launch of the operation or the flight, the bombing of Pearl Harbor. That was the message sent by Admiral Yamamoto that you can launch the planes. And once they were in sight of the harbor, the signal given was Tora, 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 which means attack, attack, attack. So that was, so it started, the sequence started with climb Mount Nitaka, which meant launch the bombers. And yeah, that was the signal to the the carrier fleet of the Japanese Navy to launch the attack. And Tora, 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 which became the more famous phrase, Tora, Tora, Tora was the order to actually bomb. So once they were in position, go and attack. Yeah. So Mount Nitaka being the tallest mountain, because this was considered a really, really important step. So to climb the highest mountain in the entire empire was the big step that they were taking. So that is why they used Mount Nitaka as the signal. So that is the event with which it's connected, the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Got there. You got there in the end. Yeah.
All right. Now that you mentioned 1940s and we're talking about Southeast Asia, so I have a question related in that time frame and from that place. Are you ready? Should I go?
Yeah.
So the question begins in the year 1938 when in Lahore, Gyanvati Sethi met her would-be husband at a game of tennis. 1939, they both decided to get married. The husband was a pilot, and in fact, Gyanvati Sethi was the first woman to get a commercial flying license in India. So she was kind of a pioneer in that case. So yeah, as I mentioned, her husband was a pilot too.
Yeah.
And the Bharat was a fleet of Tiger Moth planes which flew into Lahore city.
Okay.
So the young man, the groom, led the Bharat in a Tiger Moth plane, and there were multiple planes which all landed into Lahore, and it was quite a sight. So that was then, 1939, when they got married. Now the story moves to 1948. Jawaharlal Nehru called upon Gyanvati's husband for a secret mission. Indonesia's independence leader, Muhammad Hatta, who was the then vice president of Indonesia, and their premier, Sultan Shahjahan, had both reached out to Nehru to be evacuated as they had gone into hiding following a hunt by the Dutch colonizers.
Yep.
So Dutch had made these two Indonesian independence leaders go into hiding. And Nehru, considering India had just got independence, was sympathetic to the Indonesian independence cause. So they reached out to Nehru asking for help. The idea was if Nehru could help these two leaders get out, they could then go on to a world stage and tell about all the atrocities that the Dutch have been putting the local Indonesian population through. Now, since these two Indonesian leaders were hiding and the Dutch had said no man or plane would be allowed inside the territory, so it became a very tough job to get these two out.
Yep.
So what Jawaharlal Nehru did, he called upon Gyanvati's husband. And he asked him, can you get these two guys out? The husband said yes. And then he had a big problem. He had to figure out who would be his co-pilot. The mission was so risky that he couldn't think of anyone who could join him on this mission. That is when Gyanvati came up. And, you know, considering she was a pilot herself, she offered to be the co-pilot. So the husband-wife couple flew in the middle of the night all the way into Indonesia, avoiding detection by the Dutch forces, the Dutch army, and got these two men out. They boarded a Dakota DC-3 plane in the dark of the night. What I need you to tell me is, who was Gyanvati's husband? Who is this man and how do we know him better?
Okay, so home field advantage, I was born in Odisha. My father was Indian Administrative Service, and since I've met the gentleman in question many, many years ago, Biju Babu was one of the, many years ago, early 70s. I was about 3 years old then. So,
Okay, tell me more.
So, Biju Patnaik And Kalinga Airways was an airline that he flew. They had three Dakotas which they used to use. And my dad's had flown in one of them also. So, amazing guy. I mean, he was known as Utkal Sand, or the bull of Utkal.
Yeah.
So, amazing
Absolutely
guy.
Absolutely right.
Of course, his son is now...
His son is now the chief minister.
One of the longest serving chief ministers of this country, actually. If you look at it, he's been there for a long time. And what a lot of people don't know is that Biju Babu's daughter is a well-known writer, Geeta Mehta. Her husband was a publisher, Sunny Mehta. Amazing family. And it said Gyan was also a very imposing lady. She was also tall and, you know, proper, big-built Sikhni.
Uh-huh. I didn't know of this. And apparently, when they went on this mission, Naveen Patnaik was barely a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And they just said, you know, by the time he wakes up, we'll be back or something like that. And for their mission, the Indonesian government actually conferred Biju Patnaik with the highest civilian award that Indonesia can give.
Some amazing times to live in.
So this wasn't the only sortie that these two did. Apparently, Gyan Patnaik accompanied Biju in freedom struggle movement and evacuation of British families from Rangoon, where the Japanese had laid siege.
Yep.
And even during Nepal's independence, they flew. So they used to fly in quite a lot and fly into very tricky situations. The New York Times said, from dropping political leaflets to Indian soldiers fighting under British command in Burma and flying clandestine missions that carried Congress Party leaders from hideouts across India to secret meetings that charted the independent struggle, he was jailed by the British in 1942 and imprisoned till 1946, a year before Britain transferred power back to the Congress Party government. He then switched his efforts back to aviation, founding his own Kalinga Airlines and becoming its chief pilot. The airline later became a part of Indian Airlines, the state-owned carrier. So, yeah.
Fantastic people.
How did you meet Biju Patnaik?
My father was district collector of Cuttack and Sundargarh. At that time, Cuttack was... I think Bhubaneswar was being built or had just been built, and but Cuttack was basically the political center of Odisha.
Odisha.
Yeah, so my dad being district collector there was one of the known people. So I remember once or twice, I mean, the one I remember is meeting Biju Babu once. I was 2.5 or 3 years old or something. So I don't remember if I said anything or he said anything to me, but... Yeah, I remember meeting this guy and he was like tall. I couldn't see the top of his head. He was about 6'3 or 6'2, 6'3, something like that.
Ah. All right. Now your turn, Aditya.
So like I said, I'm going to inflict history at you. So Vasily Zaitsev was a hero of the Soviet Union. And he was an expert at something that he did. And he is, one of the things that he is best known for is a duel or an engagement or a competition he had with a German called Erwin Koenig. Now, this has been chronicled, so to say, in literature and in films also. And both of them were known teachers also in their craft. They both educated a lot of people in the field or the activity in which they worked. And Zaitsev in particular is known for having created a school for women for this in this area. So now Ed Harris played Erwin Koenig in a film and Jude Law played Vasily Zaitsev. Which film was this?
I was hoping you don't ask me which film it was because... for the life of me, can't remember the name. I know everything about the movie. I remember Ed Harris. I remember Jude Law. I remember they both being snipers on the opposite side, or marksmen on the opposite side of the war. The movie was, I'll tell you the movie's name. I remember it. Rachel Weisz was there.
Rachel Weisz, Bob Hoskins playing Nikita Khrushchev, and... Joseph Fiennes played Commissar Danilov in the film, and Ron Perlman also. Ron Perlman played his best friend Nikolai, the guy who gets shot.
So It's... Let me just think. I know of this movie. I've seen the movie quite a few times. And it's just that something that's escaping me. What was the name of the movie? I will get it, but it'll probably take me a whole lot of time, which I will have to edit out of the...
So you've got everything except the answer, so I'll give that to you. It's Enemy at the Gates.
Enemy at the... I was thinking Behind Enemy Lines, but that was that other movie with Owen Wilson.
Yeah, with Gene Hackman, I think, no? Owen Wilson...
Oh, there's Gene Hackman also? I don't remember. Yes.
I think Gene Hackman is the senior army officer who's... You know, crashed behind enemy lines and Owen Wilson goes in to get him out or something. Or maybe I'm confusing.
Oh. I think...
It's based in Boston.
Gene Hackman is the... I think, if I'm not mistaken, Gene Hackman was playing the commander who is trying to get Owen Wilson out.
Oh, the other way around.
Behind enemy lines. I think their plane crashed. I'm not...
It's based in the Serbian, Bosnian-Serbian conflict. Kosovo, somewhere there.
But yes, Enemy at the Gates was the movie. And quite a fantastic movie. I don't remember who made it, but it was quite a...
No, it was a good film.
Good movie. One that I enjoyed.
One that you can actually watch time and again, or in parts or the whole. One of those war films that isn't overtly jingoistic, but also isn't too morbid.
And I think the best part about the film is normally war movies, the action is, you know, the bigger the blast, the better it is.
Hmm.
Here, it was quite simple. It was just two marksmen who are just waiting and biding their time, waiting for the other person to make a mistake. So that just puts a whole twist to the whole war sequences that we see of, you know, the 80s.
The book was called War of the Rats.
Hmm.
And it was derived from... Zaitsev's memoirs. So apparently, the German army doesn't really have a record of an Erwin Koenig.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. But Zaitsev lists him that he was the guy who he dueled with over 3-4 days. So that's where they've got the name. And like I said, the German army says we didn't have a sniper called Koenig. And there was no Berlin sniper school that he was supposed to have headed. But, I mean, they had sniper school, but the German army denied...
But not under this guy.
Yeah. But German army denied his existence at that time. Just after the war, basically.
Quite interesting. That's a movie recommendation for any of you who are listening. Over the weekend, if you want to watch a good movie, do watch Enemy at the Gates. Now, Aditya, are you ready for your next question?
Yeah, yeah.
So, the question, it starts with a man called Lalji Godu. Lalji, G-O-D-H-O-O.
Okay.
So, this is back in the 1890s. Lalji Godu met a trader, a Kabuli wala, in Bombay. This huge, wary Pathan.
Yes.
Had come on foot and horseback all the way from Kabul.
Hmm.
Lugging a sack full of dates, dried fruits.
Hmm.
And a special ingredient for the Bombay's rich. Again, this is 1890s.
Hmm.
Lalji saw a good business opportunity. In 1894, Lalji Godu and Company was founded in a spare room at Godu residence in Masjid Bandar in South Bombay.
Hmm.
Now that organization, that company, Lalji Godu and Sons and Company,
hmm.
right now, in the past fiscal year, has an annual turnover in excess of 400 crores.
Right.
With Lalji Godu and Company being one of the biggest players in the market.
Hmm.
This ingredient that they got can't be cultivated. It primarily grows in the wild, in the cold mountains of Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan and Iran. And most of it is used in India. In its actual form, this ingredient is quite strong. So strong that in a few European places, I guess in a few places in Germany, it is used as an insecticide.
I can imagine.
Now to make this... Oh, so you probably know where I'm heading with this. But I'll still finish the question.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
To make this ingredient eatable or consumable, as a means of dilution, atta or flour is added to it. In North India, we use wheat flour. In South India, we use rice flour.
Hmm.
What I need you to tell me is, what is this ingredient? And I have a, since I have a feeling you already know what it is, you need to tell me how did you get it?
Okay, I got it because I just bought it 3 days ago. Or rather, I ordered it from the local grocer. And since we use it a lot in our food, and we have to get this because it's actually the best that's available. Otherwise, earlier we always used to get what was called a ghat of the thing, a lump of it, and keep it in water. So, solid thing soaked in water, and then you just use the water. Yeah. And if you ask your mother or parents, since you're a Kashmiri, you'll know that we use it a lot, especially for chonkoing dal or putting it in other food. I think damalu mein bhi padta hai.
Yeah. So, even some meat preparations happen.
So, but not normal kalia or something, or, but I think some of them. So, the hing is the product, and LG is the gold standard in hing, in commercial hing in India. But the best way to use it is unadulterated, soaked in water. Then you just chidko a little of the water into the food. So you get a much better flavor. Yeah. So keep it soaked in water. Heen ka pani banate, they use it. That's how we used to do it. Now, of course, it's convenient to use this sprinkler thing from the little plastic cake. But devil's dung, also it's called in some places. And they now, I just read a couple of days ago, in fact, there was a plan to grow it and cultivate it in Lahol Spiti. Because they're trying to
The environment in the higher ranges of in the Himachal state, in Himachal Pradesh. So there are plans to grow it. Apparently, there was in the 70s, there was some attempts made, but they were made in a very unscientific manner. It's just that some people got some seeds and started cultivating, but no one tracked it. If it is actually working or what are the conditions that are required. So now they are actually planning to do it. And something I read, LG is, as you also mentioned, one of the biggest players of the gold standard. Their biggest competitor is Vandevi, also from Mumbai. I'm imagining the same old part of Mumbai. And they have been, they both have been rivals since 1932.
Wow.
Imagine being in a niche market and being a rival since 1932. That's older than Pepsi Coke, I'm imagining.
Yeah, yeah. I'm, or maybe almost. I mean, it's like the Punic Wars between Rome and Carthage. Carried on for some, I think some almost 2000 years or something. Because they ended only in the... this used to, completely unrelated, this used to be a question in the mid-80s when we were quizzing that the Punic Wars had then just formally ended. I think it, they started somewhere around 200 BC or 180 BC and they ended somewhere around 1982 or 83 with a formal declaration of the cessation of hostilities between Tunisia and Italy. As the representatives of Rome and Carthage, or Carthage and Rome. So that at that time, that used
years
to be,
almost.
That's hing. But I mean, how did I get hing? Because we cook and I'm Kashmiri, so we use a lot of hing in our food.
Up next will be the audience question. So whenever you're ready, you can.
Okay, so one for the audience. This is again Second World War, and but it also has something to do with the one sport that almost half of India, if not more, considers a religion, which is cricket. If you remember, there was in many years ago, there was something called the Timeless Test, which lasted 10 days of actual play, and England versus South Africa, and it ended when the English team had to catch their boat to go back home. Otherwise, the match was continuing. England would probably have won if they had played one more day, but they had to leave the next morning, so they called it quits and said it's a draw. So now, one of the players in that England team was a bowler called Hedley Verity. Hedley Verity came from a pretty humble background in Yorkshire and played for England. He was selected for the England team by Douglas Jardine for the 1932-33 series. And Verity was a slow left-arm orthodox bowler, much like the amazing Nilesh Kulkarni, who holds a record for India in that category, or Ravi Shastri, or Maninder Singh, or even the great Bishan Singh Bedi. So, Hedley Verity, having served in India, Persia and Egypt, managed to pick up spin bowling here, I think. Or maybe he didn't, because he was actually a medium pacer who became a spinner afterwards. But he holds a record for having dismissed a batsman the maximum number of times. In fact, this batsman was almost considered to be Verity's bunny. He got rid of the guy eight times. Eight times Verity got this batsman out. So, question is, which batsman was that who Hedley Verity dismissed eight times, which is a record, because no other bowler came close to getting this guy out so many times.
All right. So, that was the audience question. And if you know what the answer is, all you have to do is send in your answers to @QuizTimeIndia on Facebook and Instagram. And Aditya, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It was a pleasure. And I must say, the level of questions was something just really pushed me. The questions pushed me. And that's always a good feeling to have. And you really brought some excellent questions there. I loved it. I enjoyed the quizzing with you.
I think that positivity is wonderful, because a lot of people, you know, if you can't get an answer, then you, a lot of times, and I've seen this happening, oh, what sort of question is that? I didn't know the answer to it. I'm like, okay, yeah, you didn't know the answer to it. There are questions which you ask, which I don't know the answers to, right? So, but yeah, thank you for bearing up with the World War II lesson, you know, almost, I can call it that, but it's something that's, I mean, conflict at one level has fascinated me in many ways. And it's always something interesting to study, because you learn so much from the way that men engage with each other, or humans engage with each other. And conflict tends to bring out both the best and the worst in people.
And that marks the end of the quiz and the episode. Thank you so much for joining me. And I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, do let us know. We are Quiz Time India on Facebook and Instagram. This is the Studio 41 podcast. We are @PodcastStudio41 on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. And one last thing. On 1st of November, India Wants to Know, IWTK, is hosting a Kannada Talkies quiz. If you love movies, if you love Kannada movies, I really recommend you check this out. You can go look up India Wants to Know on all social media platforms, and I guess you'll get all the information there. Do check out that quiz. And yeah, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for your time. You can thank me for mine.